Welcome to Read, Eat, Travel, Repeat, the book club and podcast with your hosts, Sarah, Kit, and Marianne, three friends who talk about all things books, food, and travel.
Welcome, readers, eaters, and travelers to Read, Eat, Travel, Repeat, the podcast and book club where books take us beyond the page. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kit.
And I'm Marianne. Today we'll be talking about Twilight by Stephanie Meyer, the first book of our podcast.
Spoiler warning for anyone who hasn't read the book yet, we will be talking all things Twilight, including anything that happens in the rest of the series. So if you don't want to know what happens, come back after you've read. And also, we're adult readers and we say adult things. So we are going to get into talking about all things Twilight, but first we need to talk about how we ended up here.
So, okay, so one day, I'm a high school teacher, and one day I was walking down the hallway, and I'd seen that book Twilight all over the place, but I didn't, looking at the cover, I had no idea what it was about, like cans and an apple, I had no idea. I was walking down the hallway and I saw a student. I don't even think it was a student I knew. I just stopped her and I said, "Hey, is that book any good?" And she's like, "Oh my God, yes, it's my favorite." And she just went on and on. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to read this book because it's always fun to get to know your kids and to have some way to connect with them. And then I read it and I loved it. And, you know, I think for me, it was a time in my life where my own kids, I think, were like 12 and 7 or, you know, somewhere in that age. And they were starting to not need me as much. And so I think I went into Twilight Moms like looking for like more community because I was kind of in a transitional part of my life where I didn't know, you know, what I'm going to do next. You know, their kids are growing up and they have their own interests in their own lives. And then I just found this great group of people and is still in touch with so many of them through Facebook and through obviously through the you guys that it was just. And then the best part is I've always been a reader. I've always loved to read. And I learned like all these new genres that I had no idea about and authors. And then when we did Book of the Month Club, oh my gosh, that was the best. You know, getting to talk to authors and, you know, it was just amazing to me. I still fangirl sometimes when,
totally,
you know,
100%.
And Alex Flynn, you know, comments on something I posted on Facebook or whatever.
We do Duolingo together. No big deal.
And you know, so it's like, so I'm still like that. So that's how my origin story of how I became a Twilight mom.
Okay, I'll go next. It's funny that you say that, Ma, because I had kind of the opposite. I had a year-old child at home. And same thing, I'm an English teacher, and I taught at an inner-city school. So I have kids that aren't really readers and kids who wouldn't ever read a book like this, and I see them all carrying it around, and I'm like, what are you reading? And they're like, oh, Miss Haycox, you got to read this. It's Twilight. It's so good. I'm like, okay. So I think I had a copy on my shelf and I read it and I finished each book within a day. I read all four books in 5 days only because Sunday came and I finished Eclipse and I didn't have another book. I finished Eclipse, I think, on Saturday. And I was like, I'm not going to see my kids till Monday. I need another book. It was like a drug, like these books, guys. Because I literally
would
finish Twilight. And
oh my gosh.
I know. And I look at my kids and I was like, I finished Twilight. Who's got book two? And they're like, I do. I'm like, go to your locker and get it. You have to go do this. And I think because I had this baby at home, I thought.
You had a baby at home? Because it doesn't sound like you were paying much attention to her.
No, I wasn't. Kara was a very good baby. So, but I think I had a little postpartum. I had it for both girls. And I think I was looking for the same thing, that connection. And I found this book and I kept thinking about it and going, I need to talk to adults about this. I can't just keep talking to my students because they're all going, oh my God, Jacob, Edward, you're amazing. And I'm like, yeah, but can we talk about some of this other stuff going on in here? Like hero's journey and all these bigger things. And yeah, so that's
just my to jump in for one second though, too, like it introduced me to YA. And I had never seen that as a genre, and it was so digestible for somebody who's busy, you know, like that It was like something that you didn't have to, you know, commit 3 weeks of your life to. Yeah. You could read it in a day or two. And I think that was one of the big parts for me that really jump started me back into reading again, into reading books. I always read, but I was like reading like magazines and short shit like that.
Short articles. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And it jump started me back into reading books.
Yeah.
For sure.
For sure. Yeah.
So I love this little like recap because it's been, what, it was like 2008, 2009. And we all know these stories already, but I'm like, oh yeah, I remember. Like it's a little nostalgic talking about it.
And you know, funny story, that 1 year old that I had at home, she's a senior and she'll be graduating in a few months.
Wow.
So
yeah.
Wow.
It was a long time ago.
Time flies.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so I was the last to join. So I joined in 2009, and I love that we have, like, Marianne's kids were, you know, school-aged. You had a one-year-old. And I was on bed rest. I was very much pregnant. I was a high-risk pregnancy. I had had multiple miscarriages, and I was going out of my ever-loving mind. And it was the middle of winter. And I remember being like, I just need a, it was like a, like you said, it's kind of like a drug, right? I was like, I need a book to read. Someone find me a book to read. And my poor husband, I was like, just go buy me a book. And I gave him no other information. Like, just go find me a book.
That's fun.
And he went to Wegmans because we did not have a bookstore and it was snowy out. And they have like their little shelf of books. And that was the one that was just on the display. So he picked that up and a couple other books. I couldn't even tell you which other books it was. But I read Twilight that night. Like, I did not sleep. Yeah. I read it in one go, and then I made him go back to the store and buy the rest of them.
Yeah.
Oh, and I probably finished them in this. I mean, I couldn't really do anything else. I was just, like, on my couch.
Yeah.
But I probably read the whole series within 3 or 4 days. And then I was like, well, shit, now what?
Yeah.
Like, I've now finished this book. I'm not out and about. Like, I don't even at that point have students to see because I was a paralegal. So, and I wasn't working at the moment. I had nobody to talk to about it. And immediately got on the computer and was like, well, there has to be something. Like, there has, like, this can't be all it is. And it was just very coincidentally, like, the movies were just becoming either just coming out or just becoming a big thing. And so there was all sorts of stuff, and I quite literally just stumbled into Twilight Moms, like, dead tired.
Right. Like,
just looking for anybody to talk to talk about this to.
Yeah.
And I think it was, you know, a few months after that, I want to say Donna messaged me and was like, would you like to be part of the book club? And I was like, I do want to be part of the book club. And then from there, my entire life changed.
Oh.
Like, it's a completely, I'm a completely different person. Yep. It's all because I was sleep deprived and full of anxiety and discovered a book about vampires.
Sparkly vampires.
Sparkly vampires, which is crazy.
I know.
Yeah. And yeah, the whole YA thing, like I went from reading, like I said this in my intro, I went from reading like Michael Crichton in high school because that's what I mean, you go from like Babysitter's Club, which is like, there was a lot of middle grades, Ramona, those books. And I was reading all of those. And then I'm reading Michael Crichton. I'm reading Judy Devereaux with my mom. Romance novels.
You hooked me too. You were like, just read this.
Oh, they're and so I was like, good.
Just this one.
But they're adult, like Harlequin romance kind of thing. And then I was like, and then you jump right into like literary fiction. And I was like, but sometimes you just need fun, you know?
Right.
Or even fantasy, going from Lord of the Rings to something like this is, the worlds are very different. And
well, you need, you know, something that's easily digestible that you don't have to commit that, you know, like I read all the Outlander books, after we into Twilight Moms, but sometimes I like, how the heck did I do that? That's such a time commitment.
I know.
You know, so
those books were so long too.
And I love that you said like easily digestible. You don't have to commit a lot of time to them, which accurate. But also, we dove so far into the deep end that we were doing this all like, you could read the book in a day, but then we were all over like the forums, like,
oh my God,
digging so much deeper and making all sorts of connections and having these very like academic discussions
about
two words,
to read the book, but how much fun with like the fractured fairy tales.
Oh, yeah.
How much I loved fun that to dig one. Into all yeah. of that. It was my favorite.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Just have some other people who are willing to go down the rabbit hole with you, yeah. you know, and just yes. dig into all the details. Because, you know, your family is not going to listen to you.
No.
And, you know.
No. So we should probably explain for people who don't know Twilight Moms. But I do still sell people that I was part of Twilight Moms. They're like, oh, my gosh, I remember that. It was a huge forum.
I mention it
50,
every
70,
single presentation I do.
I mean, I don't remember how many. We had enough followers that Stephanie Meyer knew who we were.
Yeah.
Right.
And all the cast in the movies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They knew Twilight Moms. Like, it was a big deal.
It was a thing.
And so
I feel like it was a cultural phenomenon.
It was
a cultural shift.
Yep. Well, in doing research for this, when I pulled up those articles and I read through them, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, like I can't believe we were part of that.
Oh, I know.
You know.
I mean, when I said it, like changed 100% my life being part of that group, because there was people from all over the world, which
yep.
was so much fun to get different perspectives
yep.
on the books, on the movies, from all mm-hmm. over the world. But it also like one of the things as I was like thinking about what are we going to talk about on this
yeah.
podcast was why.
Yeah.
Like what
yeah.
was the touch point there
yeah.
that made it so that something like Twilight Moms could go from like five people sitting in a room talking about a book, like
mm-hmm.
in a very traditional book club way, to what it became, which was
yeah.
tens of thousands of members.
Yeah. Yeah.
All together around this one
yeah.
thing, which at the end of the day is it's a book. It's a book about a kid who discovers vampires and werewolves are real. Like it's a very basic
yeah.
concept.
Yeah.
But it was such a shift in how we read books and how we interact
mm-hmm.
with books and how you can like build a community around a
story.
Oh,
yeah. Absolutely.
Well, I guess so, too, is like the internet. I mean, it had been around for a while then, but it was still relatively new. So
mm-hmm.
I think that was part of it probably, too, that ability to be able to connect with other people all over the world so easily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm still friends with so many.
Oh, absolutely.
So many
yeah.
Through Facebook. And how many have we met in real life? Like,
oh, I know. I know.
Like, besides the three of us, because the three
right.
of us have actually met
yeah.
several times.
But even the like stranger danger, like don't go meet people that you only know from the internet. And we were all flying to Florida together, like
oh, no, right?
driving across the state. And I'm like, I'm at the hotel. Like, can't wait to see you. We don't know each other. It's fine.
Well, I know my mommy board. I have a mommy board. I was
oh,
on
that's right.
when
yep.
Kelsey was born, and
yeah.
like. We did kind of like the 6 degrees of separation. Like if Sarah met you and she told me, and I met Sarah, then I knew that you were okay. You know?
Yeah.
So that's
meanwhile, I just flew from New York and met Sarah at a hotel. I was like, she
yeah.
seems fine.
And then we stayed in the same hotel and roomed and they're like, okay, sure.
We shared a room
yeah.
together.
Day one.
Yeah. Was the first time when we went to the conference?
Yeah,
at Disney,
MCT.
Yeah.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Disney.
Yeah.
Oh, and then Sarah, you and I went to ALA in Chicago. Yeah.
Yep.
And then we also did the Disney half marathon
Disney,
together.
Yep.
We did.
We ran a half marathon.
And Sarah, you and I went to Chicago too, right?
No, we went to Kentucky. You and I ran the.
But we where did
we
did
go to
meet Paul? Not Paul. Alex Mraz.
Yeah, we were in Chicago. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think that was for
Vampire,
another NCT.
Vampire Paul.
And also one of the Volturi.
I don't remember.
But not Arrow one.
Not Arrow, yeah.
Not Arrow. I'm going to look it up. Not Arrow and not Caius, so the other one.
The other one, yeah. I totally forgot about him because I love Paul Mraz. He's just like...
I have that picture hanging on my wall upstairs.
Do you? I have it.
I do.
I have it somewhere. I feel like I have it, yeah, somewhere too, hanging up. But, yeah,
it's a good one.
I remember thinking the same thing when we first went to meet, and my students are like, where are you going? I'm like, I'm going to a conference in Florida. Well, who are you going with? I'm like, two people I met on the internet.
But you tell us not to do that, miss.
I'm like, but we talked
right.
for a few years online before.
Right.
And to think, this was all, of course,
we worked
before.
Together. It's a
yeah.
job.
Yeah.
It was all before, like, people were doing video calls. Remember, there was kind of a Skype, but nobody ever Skyped. Like,
yeah.
And now it's like the stuff is so easy.
How did we even do the author chats we used to do? What technology did we use?
I don't even remember. It was all blocking. No, because we didn't do video Skype. With them. Remember in our book club, we would do live chats right in twilightmoms.com.
Yeah.
How did we do, like, maybe that was summer camp?
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
Oh, I forgot about that too. Which
I
is the other
like
thing.
We must have used some Skype for that.
Yeah, maybe. We should mention
Marcus.
Marcus, the vulture we met, his name was Marcus. We should mention too that after Twilight Moms started to wane a little, Lisa, the creator, got us hooked up on our book club, became Eve's Fan Garden.
Yes.
So then we ran that together for a while. Still has a presence on Facebook. We're just...
Oh, it doesn't really?
Yeah.
I know there's...
Every once in a while, people will post, but not very often, but mostly because we stopped posting, but...
We were like, well, then you're right.
The kids got older, and you're like, yeah, I can't have a life right now because my life is my children, and...
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is how we ended up here. Now all the children are getting older because
yours and
mine are both in high school. And
mine are grown and married.
I know. Right? Yours are all grown and married. And
I know. No grandchildren, though, but, you know.
Yeah.
I have grandcats.
I would say Kara will be leaving soon. Elena's a freshman in high school, and she eats, sleeps, and breathes gymnastics. So that's my life right now. And I was like, I miss this. I miss talking about books with people and meeting authors.
Absolutely.
And how many authors have we met?
Oh, I know.
A ton.
But I think it's like to like circle it all back together. When we talked about like, what was it about that moment that made Twilight Moms work? It was just like a moment in time when everything came together where like we were all in the right place to find the book and like the technology was there and this, that, the other, which is kind of how we ended up back here now is that we're all kind of coming back to that place where like, all right, I have a little more time for what is something that I want to do that I enjoy. That's kind of like a passion project for us.
Yeah.
And we were all in Florida at the same-ish time and could not,
and did not meet up.
We were like 20 feet away from each other and couldn't get our lives together enough to see each other.
Yeah.
So I think, Sarah, I think you're the one that texted. That was like, what if we did a podcast?
I couldn't believe it. When we were at Disney again, Kit and I, the same weekend, and I got back to the bus station, and we'd been on Tiana's Bayou ride, and I literally looked, and your post said,
we were in the Country
Bears. Finishing the day in Country Bear Jamboree. And I was like, my God, I haven't seen you in like 10 years. And I couldn't, I don't think I would have walked by you without not knowing you because your hair is pink. But
it's pink today.
It might be a different color tomorrow.
It might be different, but
I was blonde. But it was blonde and like very curly. It was noticeable.
And I was like, we used to go on these adventures together, and I miss that. Yeah. And it's time to get back into it. So
absolutely.
If I had had a tattoo artist, like if I knew Josh then. Like, I know him now, the number of Twilight-related tattoos I would have had.
True.
Like, because at this point, this poor man, I just text him and I'm like, hey, here's a random collection of words. Please make it pretty for me.
Right.
It would have been like, sparkles, werewolf, moon, flower.
Right.
Make me something cool.
Well, you need like baseball in there or something too.
Yeah. Please give me a tattoo that is just a bag full of hard-boiled eggs. Fucking Emmett Cullen.
Yes.
Or Emmett.
Or just an apple. You'd be like, why do you have this apple? Is it because you work with kids? No. It's Twilight.
No.
It's the Garden of Good and Evil.
It's from Twilight. I'm an expert. Like the number of ridiculous tattoos I would have had. Thank God I had not met Josh yet because he doesn't tell me no when I come up with ridiculous ideas.
Well, he's like, okay.
Which is why on my leg I currently have a frog eating egg yolk flying on a bat.
Okay. Nice. Hey,
is this a fever dream or something?
It was. So this is a side story, but it was a TikTok video of like people are on Instagram reel or whatever of someone cooking frogs like to eat, and for whatever reason they're putting raw eggs in their mouths first. Like, okay. So they would spoon an egg into the frog's mouth, and then they would cook it, and then they eat it. And it was, again, one of those, like, moment in time things. For whatever reason, we both became, like, very obsessed with, like, right. The why. Like, why? If we couldn't find it anywhere. Like, why are you doing this? So I sent more videos than there should be in this world of frogs eating eggs. To my poor tattoo artist.
Okay.
Who is now, like, one of my good friends. But, like... And I'm terrified of bats.
Yeah.
So then it became like a separate through line. And then I was trying to come up with a tattoo because every time I go back to Syracuse, I get a tattoo. And I was like, I literally just went, what if it was just a frog eating, like a fancy frog eating an egg and like a bat?
Not just a general frog, but a fancy frog.
He didn't end up being fancy. He's much more... carefree than what I had in my head. And he was like, what do you want it to look like? I was like, I literally don't care. Like,
exactly do you have a fancy frog? Please, I don't understand how
he was going to have a top hat and a monocle.
Oh, okay.
So, like,
of course.
The planter's nut guy, but a frog.
Yep.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant.
The shit that I say to this poor man. He puts up with a lot. I appreciate him.
All right.
If that makes the podcast, I appreciate it, Jack. For humoring.
He could be a sponsor.
Right, yeah. Sponsor our...
Sponsored by Kit's ridiculous tattoos. Yeah.
Okay.
Who wants to give their initial reaction first?
You go, Sarah.
Okay. My initial reaction when I first read this, I feel like I had never read anything like this in my life, and I didn't even know how to explain it, why I was drawn to these characters so much. It was just really weird. I just had never read anything where I was so into it that I couldn't move on to another book for a while.
Right.
Basically.
I think for me, I don't know that I'd ever read anything else supernatural, because that's not really something normally do. And mainly because I'm incredibly squeamish and I don't like bloody things. Mm-hmm. And so I think I always assumed that, like,
vampires and blood, it's going to be gross.
It's vampires and blood, yeah.
And I was like taken, you know, like, wow, this is really cool. It's like normal people, but some of them are vampires, and mm-hmm. I can deal with this world. You know, like, I think I told you, I don't know if I told you guys, I tried to read Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah.
And I got through, like, the first book, and then when I was on the second book, I couldn't keep track of all the vocabulary. You know, my brain doesn't function well that way. So for me to be able to read these supernatural characters but not have to learn a whole new vocabulary, I think that's what really struck me.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and it was, like you said, too, it was like... It's a real place.
Right.
So it literally was like real, but like a little bit of fantasy mixed in with something that like really exists. So you didn't have to learn a whole world and a whole.
Right. Right. It's
like. Yeah.
Yeah. I think for me, like these, it was definitely in the same vein of books that I've always read, in that the idea that like you can go find magical shit out there. Mm-hmm. Like that was always the kind of books that I liked. Like The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Mm. Those are just regular kids that stumble into something amazing. But like you were saying earlier, Sarah, like at a certain point you stop reading that stuff because now you're a grown up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And like you've moved on to grown up things. And at the time I read Twilight, I was a paralegal.
Mm-hmm.
I looked like a paralegal, like I had the long brown hair. There was no tattoos. I was trying to be like a professional adult. And when I read these books, like when I think back now, I'm sure I had a million thoughts that were not all like wholly sane.
Right.
But like when I think back now, the thought that I like the nostalgic feeling I have about like what it made me feel was mm-hmm. that it's okay to just enjoy things.
Yeah.
Like it's okay to just read a book and get lost in like mm-hmm. kind of unbelievable story of a girl that finds a vampire and a werewolf, and like, what mm-hmm. does that mean?
Yeah.
And because it was set in real places that you could go visit and you could go see, it made it feel like something that could actually for real happen. Like, and that was for those of you that are just listening and not seeing what we're seeing, Ma has the best dog, unofficial mascot, Oswald, who just pops in and out of the screen. And it's taking me right back to COVID learning, where everyone's like, and here's my dog. Yes. It's the best. I love it.
Show your real estate class.
I didn't realize he was in his screen.
He did. It was so funny because he just popped in and he just kind of was like looking like, who are you talking to, Ma?
That's what my dog would do if he was downstairs. He is currently upstairs, but Bunny would also pop his head up and be like, sup, I would like to be part of this podcast. But yeah, so for me, my knee-jerk reaction when I first read the book was just like, how fun. Like, how fun it is to read this book.
Yeah, yeah.
And then definitely. I just fell in love with everything about it from there.
Well, then I feel like once we started talking and dissecting a little bit and learning, I mean, Stephanie Meyer, talk about how it's not the greatest writing ever. However, she was an English major. And so all of her, everything that she wrote about, I mean, she, like I said before, she has hero's journey. She's got her mythology and things like that, that not everyone knows.
Yes.
And it's kind of amazing that she has this.
I'm staring at my shelf.
I can tell you're looking at your shelf.
I am. I'm looking for a specific book that I bought, but the Joseph Campbell book.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
Hero with a thousand faces.
Yes. Once we started talking about these things, and I mean, I was a history major in school, and I was a theater minor, so I read books, but I had never studied books.
Yeah.
So even though this, I'm tapping the book as if everyone can see me touching my Twilight book. So even though this book maybe is not like the best written book, it tapped into all these other things where suddenly I was learning so much more about like literary devices and like connections and these crazy things, which eventually led me to become a librarian. So now I do this stuff all the time. But there was something about this specific story and this specific book that just went, oh, it's not just fun to read the book. It's fun to explore all these other little things that are connected to it, too.
Yeah. Well, we talked, too, about
the connections with the people, though. And I think that's, that was a big part of it, though, too, is the connections we made with other people. And that just added to the whole experience, you know, because we had people like Lynn, who, I mean, she is like so
smart.
Yes. And like, so I played Wordle with her, and Words with Friends.
Words with Friends.
So what, I mean, that's got to be, 10 years we've been playing it at least?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, when I actually win, I feel like I should, like, take out a newspaper ad because I beat Lynn, you know? And, you know, and so when she would be talking about some of the details of the book, I was like, oh, I never saw it that way. That's really interesting.
We got into the whole fractured fairy tale. I mean, there were we moderated, of course, the literary part, which was kind of nice.
Yes.
But even the chats that I hung out in were, fractured fairy tales and things like that. There were some that was just like, ooh, Edward's so hot. Ooh, Jacob's so hot. And I was like, yeah, I'm okay with it. They're kids. Like, I don't need that. But
those are children.
Yeah. And
well,
I worked on my master's
Edward was,
thesis.
What, 117 years old? So
fair.
Know.
He was too old for all of us.
He was too old for every last one of us. He was slightly geriatric.
He was. So but, I
flawless skin, though.
Flawless skin.
Marble skin. Cold marble skin.
Beautiful. It has a nice glow to it when you're in the sun.
Of all the transitions we could have made, we were very specifically going to talk about what was it about Edward? And I don't know that we can talk about that without also talking about, like, what are our feelings about the book now?
Yeah.
Like, because I think I would almost find it impossible to talk about Edward, like, nostalgically without also acknowledging the fact that, like, wow.
Wow. Like,
so there's like 15 years ago. I'm not great at math. I'm 43 now. So I was, you know, in my late 20s, early 30s when we were doing the Twilight Moms thing. Mm-hmm. And at no point when I was reading it then did I ever think that, like, the love for Edward was odd. Like,
no.
I was firmly Team Jacob, but I absolutely understood why people would be like, yes, Edward. Looking back on it now, 15 years later, I'm like, he's a stalker. A good-looking stalker, but a stalker. And when I was rereading the book, I forgot how she described his clothing. Like, in the movie, he's very much dressed like a contemporary teenager. And I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. He's, like, jeans and a t-shirt and, like, beautiful hair. And, like, he's sparkly, so, like, he takes good care of his skin. But, like, when I was reading the book, and I forget exactly the words, but he was, like, wearing, like, a cream turtleneck.
Yeah.
And some khaki pants.
And a camel-colored jacket or something.
I was like, first of all, very beige. That's not going to do anything for your skin tone. You've been around long enough to figure it out. Like, mm-hmm. have someone do your colors.
Yeah.
You've got this, buddy. Mm-hmm. But as an adult, like, now reading it back, I find it so endearing that younger me, past me, was like, yes.
Yes.
Khakis and a beige turtleneck, flawless choices. And I was 100% with Bella on the, like, yeah, I want that. Like, yes.
Yeah.
Please come into my bedroom at night and watch me sleep.
And watch me sleep,
monochromatic Abercrombie and Fitch clothes. That would be a Gap outfit.
What I thought was really interesting, like, for me, because I listened to it this time. And I think it was a whole different experience listening to it, because, like, then I noticed so many times when she talked about his cold marble skin and his unyielding skin. And I'm like, this doesn't seem appealing whatsoever, you know. Let's go make out with a bust of.
He's literally rock hard, like his whole body.
James Madison or something, you know. I'm just like. Where was the appeal of cold marble skin that's unyielding and like?
I know.
Do you think? Go ahead.
When I was reading, I kept thinking, why? Like, I got to be able to answer this. And I think that for me, the hopeless romantic in me, I love the idea of first love. And I think that high school love, that love you felt for that person, which now we look back and I'm like, oh my God, my high school boyfriend. No, but I think we all wanted that when you're that age. And so for me, relating to Bella, because I'm like, that's exactly what I wanted. And I felt odd and clumsy and not pretty. And here's this really good looking guy that pays attention.
Right. Yeah.
And you like wanted that. There's something, that mysterious thing about him. That's something about I want to go back. Like, it reminded me of high school in a good way. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to like relive that, I guess. And I'm sure I'm not the only one. I'm the only woman who thought that.
Well, I mean, there was tens of thousands of us on Twilight Moms who I think all kind of had that same experience of like, there's something about this relationship that leaves us like with a little bit of nostalgia.
Yeah.
And also like, I wish I had that.
Yeah.
Even if it was just, I wish I had a book like this to read when I was a teenager.
Exactly.
Because we kind of skipped right past that.
Yeah.
And suddenly there is this book and we can kind of relive our youth a little bit through it.
Yeah.
And I know for me, the connection to Bella was less like the clumsy plain, because when I was reading the book, you know, 15 years ago, I was very plain looking, but when I was in high school, I had bright blue hair and like, I was very much like a, you're going to pay attention to me kind of kid. But I didn't feel like I belonged, but I also was so deep into the, like, I wanted magic to be real so badly. Like, I want, and I still do. Like, I love the idea that vampires and werewolves and, like, portals to other worlds could exist. I just haven't found it yet.
Yeah.
Right.
So this book and Bella, who is just a very normal kid that I think a lot of people can relate to. You know, it's a kid from a broken home. Mm-hmm. She's kind of taking care of her dad. She's got loving parents, but they aren't necessarily the best caretakers.
Right, right.
So she's kind of assumed this very adult role. And suddenly she has the opportunity to to kind of be swept off her feet and learn new things. And it's dangerous and it's scary, but it's also exciting and romantic. And she's got several different boys fighting over her because, of course, she does. She's plain and she's clumsy and everyone's falling all over their feet for her.
And
but
she's fresh meat in the new in the new school.
The fresh meat in new high school. Yeah.
Yeah.
A high school
like
that's
a
so small.
For her to solve. Yeah. That
we've all known each other since they were.
To.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
absolutely.
You know when Edward wasn't irrationally angry, he was very much a gentleman. You know, but you know, but it's like sometimes I'm like, oh my God, he's like borderline emotionally abusive though. Like in the reread, you know, like when he screams at her to get in when those guys in was it
Port Angeles.
You know, and I was like, it just like the time that the first time they met when he was at or they were he. The first time they met when he was her lab partner and he just like glared at her and
glared
she just
at her.
You know, it was like, wow, what a guy, you know, really.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's the like I was showing. I think, Marianne, you were off fixing your microphone. But I showed Sarah this is like my copy of the book. And it's the spine is broke, like exactly on the one page. But speaking of like emotionally abusive, page 264, for those of you reading along, it's where he's like kind of like needling at her and he's like, as if you could outrun me. Like as if you could fight me off. Like he's trying to scare her.
He's trying to scare her.
And like but then less than a page later he's like, I'm not thirsty today, honestly. Like, are you all right? I would never hurt you. And I was like, well, like when I read it the first time, like, you know, forever ago, I was like, damn, this guy needs some help and she's the one to do it. And it was this very kind of a romantic thing. But I read it this time and I was like, oh, like, you're 115 years old. Pull yourself together.
Yeah.
Right.
But you're also bloodthirsty. You can't help yourself. So hormones, I guess. Vampire blood hormones.
Yeah.
Or something along those
lines. Okay, so is that a metaphor that, like, Stephanie Myers was putting in there about, like, teenagers and hormones and being irresistible?
Yeah. they're all a little, like, all over the place.
Dig in, you know, like we did on Twilight Moms, you know, trying to find that hidden meaning in there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I think that's what, like, because Sarah, you taught it in class, right? Like,
all
of those things that kids can relate to that lead to deeper discussions.
Yep. Yeah, we talked about all that stuff in my class. The amount of hero's journey stuff in here, like there's a line where he mutters an oath. Like, doing an oath is, like, one of the traits of, or parts of Hero's Journey. Tons of foreshadowing at the beginning. I mean, the first beginning talks about what she's wearing as she's going to the airport, and she says, I was wearing it as a farewell gesture. Like, everything in the first, like, four pages, like, I said my goodbyes to the sun, I blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And you're like, oh, my gosh, it's because she's going to become a vampire eventually. And, like, I now exiled myself. Like, that's total hero's journey.
And I didn't remember any of that until, like, I did the reread. And I was like, how? Like, you always remember that first page where she talks about how, like, she never thought she was going to die in the ballet studio, but here we are.
Yep.
Like, that's a great hook. That's a great start to the book because you know where we're going to end, but we don't know how we're going to get there. But I didn't remember any of the just very angsty, dramatic, like, goodbye and arriving in Forks and, like, how it took, you had to take this plane ride and then get it on another plane and then you had to do a drive and, like, just how, like, much the point was hammered home that, like, this is a whole different world for Bella and she's about to have her whole world rocked. Like, you don't know how yet.
Right.
You know it's going to end up with her almost dying because we know that, like, at that point I knew there was more books, so I know she's not going to die. But kind of she does eventually.
Yeah.
Like, there was so much packed into those first few pages that I did not catch the first time I read
it. Until you read it again. Yep.
Yes.
I was looking, page 10, we've got, like, she's describing herself. My skin could be pretty. It was very clear, almost translucent looking. But it all depended on color. I had no color here. Facing my pallid reflection in the mirror, I was forced to admit I was lying to myself. It wasn't just physically that I'd never fit in. I didn't relate well to people my age. Maybe the truth was that I didn't relate well to people. Like,
yeah,
she totally, I mean, that's why I'm like, Stephenie Meyer, you say what you want about her writing, but she put stuff like this in. And it, well, and then also, it's like, holy cow. Like, of course she puts in right away that Bella's different. Bella doesn't get along with people. Of course she's going to be drawn to the other people in Forks that also don't belong also anywhere. Don't yeah.
I think this is like a super important point too that you're making, Sarah, with like the difference between being a good writer and writing for a specific audience.
Yeah.
I think Twilight did something really interesting in that it was not written for us.
No,
it ended up being. It ended up being for us. It was not written for us. This is a book that is very clearly and I think very intentionally written for teenagers.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't need to be like super verbose or have a lot of flowery language. In fact, it probably shouldn't because you want the kids to get the message. You don't want them, to your point, Marianne, getting lost in the words of Harry Potter because you're trying so hard to figure out what does it mean? What is the intention of it? Twilight was written specifically for teenagers to be digestible by teenagers.
Yeah.
And I think it was written really well for that audience.
Yes, I agree.
Absolutely. And that's why one thing, too, is I think we talked about this one time before, is that I get really mad when I see people bashing certain authors that are popular. Because, I'm sorry, but any book that gets kids or young people reading...
Yeah.
is a good book, you know. You don't have to be reading literary fiction to be worthwhile reading, you know. And I see sometimes on like message boards and things like that. A message board sounds like 2008, but you know, on, you know.
From whence we came.
But you see these people who bash like really popular authors. And I'm like, you know what? If that gets my 25-year-old, or actually she's 26, my 26-year-old daughter reading again, and she has a book club, I'm all for it. You know, I love the fact that she's reading. I don't care what's in the book as long as she's reading, because then 20 years from now, maybe her tastes are going to change, but she's reading.
Yep. That's exactly it.
I was just thinking about how our students of the 2025 would not be able to relate to certain parts of it, like the technological changes. Because this book is 20 years old, because it came out in 2005.
It is,
That's insane.
You know, so I just, you know, I know some of my students were reading it last year, and I just wonder how it's like historical fiction for them.
Did you notice when you were listening, Marianne, like there's a whole description about her computer setup at her desk, how Charlie had taken like great, I have such a love-hate relationship with Charlie Swan, but he had taken like these great pains to make sure that the modem lines were like stapled to the floor so she wouldn't, because she's clumsy.
And it's dial-up.
And it's dial-up.
Dial-up, which kids have no idea what that is.
No idea.
I can hear the AOL like in my head.
Yes, exactly.
You know?
But there's a general rule of thumb in librarianship that once a book is 20 years old, it gets moved to the historical fiction section.
Oh my god,
This would stay in like supernatural probably, but like if I was I genrefy all my libraries. If this was like a contemporary fiction, it would get moved to historical fiction this year.
Yeah.
Like it would officially be classified.
Well, just even, too, the fact that, you know, Bella didn't contact her mom for, like, 2 days after she got to Forks. Until she opened up her email and emailed her mom back. And I'm thinking, like, our kids would be like, well, why didn't she just send a snap when the plane landed or something, you know?
And why does her mom even need a phone call? She can just track her on the Find My app like, where's my iPhone? Like, you don't even, like, Life 365. Right. Renee would have been all over everything.
Life 360 will notify you when your plane lands.
Yes.
Like mine, I'm flying, it'll be like, we've notified your contacts that you have arrived.
I'm like, oh my God, thanks. That's crazy. My children just track me and Find My Friends. As a matter of fact, Kelsey texted me today. She's like, oh, you're at work. I thought you were still in Georgia because she was checking to see where I was, you know, so. And then I think there was something else like about a phone book, and there was like so many things that our students would be like, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, when they watch like the movie, when they watch the film and they roll in the VCR.
The VCR
TV.
Yes.
Yes, that was in the book though too. Like the,
yes. Yeah, I'm like, yes. I stream everything in my classroom. Like I don't even have anything in my room anymore that will play a DVD. I have to just download it or buy it.
If I had to buy like an external DVD drive,
I have one of those
like
too.
A couple that like teachers wanted to use still, and I was like, I don't, our computers don't play that.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I think it would be really interesting to hear from like teenagers nowadays, kids these days, about how they feel about, like, does that take them out of the story?
Yeah.
If they're like, what in the world is a modem? Like, does that take them out of the story, or are they able to just be like, it's a technology thing, I'm moving on?
I think they would still understand modem, but I don't think they would understand, like, the cords and things like that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because I think that's still a term that you would use, but
true.
But
I feel like I've read somewhere once, or an author, and Stephen King is sticking in my head, but I'm not sure it's him. Talks about how it's dangerous to put things like that in your novels because it dates them very quickly. Like putting in names of songs, even, and things like that. They're like, you shouldn't put any of that in.
I've seen that discussion come up a couple times just on like author Twitter, of like, you know, how. What should you include and what shouldn't you include? And a lot of it boils down to like, who is your audience?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Like, is your audience really like, if your story is supposed to be kind of a nostalgic story, then like go for it. But like, if you want it to be timeless, you really shouldn't include that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, but I feel like that's gotta be hard to do because like, there's no way to know which technology is going to become obsolete which is going to stick around.
Right.
And I've read a couple of like advanced copies of some books recently, and I can't think of any off the top of my head, the names of them, where they were set like 10, 15 years ago.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So that they didn't have to address like smartphones because especially if it's like a mystery, like, well, why doesn't she just Google it on her smartphone or whatever?
Why didn't she take a photo? She has her phone with her.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So that they're not falling into that trap of know, people going, well, you know, you have the technology, why aren't you using it?
But even if they use it, a lot of times they'll just mention, you know, like, I was on social media. They don't mention specific platforms or things like that, because it's just I checked my social media and blah blah blah, or a lot of times I'll find the characters like, my phone died, I turned the phone off, or I'm out of service, so that it's easy to be like, this is why you couldn't contact them because you had no service or something like that.
And that's the thing. Yeah. I mean, the book could be obsolete before you publish it. Like when Twitter turned to X, or, you know, TikTok was almost banned and you know, that your book could be obsolete before it's even out and published.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It is interesting to reread it again and be like, wow, this is really,
it's of a time.
Yeah. Totally of the time. Totally of the time. All right. Who has a favorite scene?
I don't know. I can't think of one right now.
So I think, like, if we're going to talk favorite scenes, I think, like, the meadow scene is, I don't know that I would list it necessarily as, like, my favorite scene, but I do think it's, like, the most iconic scene.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Like, there's, like, you know, there's so much to talk about in the meadow scene, just from even, like, the imagery of it and, like, it's kind of, like, the first time that they are, I want to say, like, first time it's kind of like they're themselves, like they feel like they're not being watched by anyone else. They're kind of letting themselves let down some of those walls and like talk to each other as equals instead of trying to be like, what the hell are you?
Yeah.
And him being like, I kind of want to eat you, but like, I might be in love with you, who knows? So it's kind of like the turning point, I think, when I was reading the book, you were like, oh, you got, and I remember whenever anyone new would read the book, it would be like, tell me when you got to the meadow scene.
Yes.
Like, tell me when you're at this point.
Yes. I use this example for my students all the time, because reading back years ago interviews that Stephanie Meyer, this is where the book started. That she did not start at the beginning. She had a dream about the meadow, and she wrote about the meadow. And so I tell my students that all the time when they're working on papers. Guys, you do not have to start at the beginning. You can start wherever the heck you want. You can start with a conclusion. You can start with an introduction if you want. You can start at the middle paragraph, body paragraph, because you know what you want to say. Because that's what Stephanie Meyer did. She dreamed about the meadow. She wrote from the meadow to the end. And then went back to the beginning and said, now how do I get these people together? And I've always loved that because
That's cool.
That.
Yeah.
Now, one thing that makes me still thinking about all that, though, and it kind of goes back to Bella. It's like she was seemed like she was scared of her own shadow sometimes, but then she wasn't scared of vampires. I mean, what is up with that? You know, like she was scared going into Forks High School, but hey, you're a vampire. I'm cool with it. You know, no problem.
That's me. That's me 100%. When we talk about like why I connected to Bella, I was a very, very scared kid. I was afraid of everything. My anxiety like ruled my like every decision making process. Up to and including whether or not to join Twilight Moms and like when you guys at like I still remember the first time we were going to Florida and you were like, let's do a phone call to plan.
Yeah.
My level of panic. I didn't talk to people on the phone. And
right.
I was like, it was terrifying to me to like take that step.
Yep. Yep.
But and again, like if there's something about impossible things that peaks that bridges that gap of anxiety to I want to see what happens next.
Yeah.
And that it would have absolutely been me. I would never have transferred to a different school. Like Bella doing that, forget about it. I could never be me. But seeing
as literally a senior in high school,
literally not. But seeing something that I can't explain, my curiosity would have completely overwhelmed my anxiety.
Yeah.
Like my need to know what this is that's happening.
Yep. Yep.
And as a teenager who is super boy crazy, a cute boy changes everything. Like a hot boy giving you attention,
yes.
Sign me up.
That's, I think, where I was. Hot boy giving me attention, okay. I'm all over that.
I don't care if you're a vampire.
He thinks we're soulmates, okay.
Like, done. I don't even have to change anything about myself. He doesn't want me to.
Yeah, that's true.
He just loves me anyways.
I feel like another big scene is the blood typing. And I think it's because it's not in the movie. And everyone was so mad that's such a crucial part where Edward, like, she's intrigued by Edward because how does he know that they're blood typing? Why doesn't he want to go? And then when she talks about how she can smell the blood.
Yes, yes, yes.
Smell the copper in the blood. And he's like, nobody can smell blood. Like, only vampires can. Like, in his mind, he's thinking that. That was such an intriguing scene. Yeah, and then, of course, that's their first, like, really big conversation when she's sitting in the car with him. And they're talking about music they listen to. And I think that's that's an iconic.
On the CD player, you know.
On the CD player. Pop those CDs in. But I think that was like Edward always wanted to know, like, what is it about Bella? And it was one of those moments where, like, it was just a little sliver of information about her.
That,
like, intrigued him. Like,
maybe
there's something more here than just I want to drain her of her blood.
Yeah.
Because she smells good.
Yeah.
More than just being a blood donor.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think the other scene, though, we have to talk about is the baseball scene.
Oh, yeah.
Which, when I read the book the first time, and even when I read the book this time, it's not, I think the movie, like, exploded that scene, like, to something far beyond that it was in the book. Like, in the book, you're like, vampires play baseball. It, first of all, should have felt very weird.
Yeah.
Like, but I was like, yes, it's just a vampire family playing baseball on the weekend. Like,
just
what's
what
up?
You do. You
like,
hit so you hard.
Do. It's like some family bonding.
Mm-hmm. No biggie.
But
no biggie.
The movie, like, the soundtrack, the lighting, the, like, crazy speed, slow motion camera work. Like, that scene is like, I think it's the one you think of.
And I think it's like hard now after seeing the movie is like separating the two. I think that makes the movie harder too.
Yeah,
for sure.
I love Muse because of it. They're now one of my favorite bands. Like, I own everything from them. Like, because of Super. And funny story today when my yearbook class, we always listen to Spotify and random songs come on, and Supermassive Black Hole came on today, and some of my seniors, of course, who have read it, they go, I cannot listen to this song and not think of vampires playing baseball.
You're like, yes, my work here is done.
That's cute.
I'm like, how perfect for today. We're going to go home and record this, and I'm going to be like, hey, guys.
Like, shout out to my yearbook kids.
Yeah. I also loved, I feel like any of the scenes, I think Stephenie Meyer's really good at the dialogue. So any of the scenes where Edward and Bella were just talking and getting to know each other, when she's at his house meeting his family and he's playing the piano and they're in his bedroom and they're just talking and learning the histories in Port Angeles in the car on the way home. Those are like, those scenes were just so good. So I think because she was so good with conversation, they were very readable. You just read it really easily. Like, this is a conversation I'm listening to.
Really easy to like put yourself in Bella's position too. Like, you could see yourself, this is a totally normal conversation that you could see yourself having. There was he's a vampire, but there's nothing supernatural about like the topics of conversation, like the way they're being handled. It's very like this is just a conversation you would have with like a cute boy that you like.
So he's asking her all the things, like, what's your favorite color, what's your
Well, that's like I said, though, when he's not irrationally angry, then he's very much a gentleman, you know? He's like the perfect date until, you know, he's pissed off because some stalkers tried to
that I'm going to rip their head off.
He's overcome by, like, bloodlust and anger.
Distract me! Distract me so I don't go kill them! Get in the car!
Just prattle. I always love that. Just prattle about anything. I'm like, prattle? Who uses that word?
Well, prattle. He is a young gentleman from the early 20th century, so yes, prattle along.
Oh my god, I love it.
Prattle on. You're good. But I think, like, all of that made it so relatable and so easily to digest, and was part of why people, like, devoured the books.
Yeah,
because you're like, I want more of that.
Yeah,
for sure. I do think the flip side of that is Team Jacob. I'm absolutely gonna bring him up because I was 100% all in Team Jacob.
Yeah,
and I think it was an interesting like thing that Stephenie Meyer did, and that not the greatest research on the reality of tribe, because that's a real tribe. Maybe not her strong suit.
I wonder how they felt about it. Like, did she ask permission? Make your tribe
out
werewolves and?
Yeah, like that to me was such a, like, as someone with like my degrees are in Native American history.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, what a weird choice to make.
Yeah.
To choose like a real tribe, but also, like, what an interesting, like, backstory and creation story and history to create.
The mix between myth and reality, making it real, but also, like, believable. Like, this is totally believable
Native
American tribe could be werewolves.
Vampires. Well, because there's always been mythology around skinwalkers.
Yes.
And in so many different cultures, not just Native American cultures, that it isn't that big of a leap.
Yeah.
But I've always kind of wondered, like, was permission asked? Like, did they give her any information, like, from a research standpoint? And then the fallout afterwards, both, like, positive and negative, is you have now a spotlight on you.
Mm-hmm.
And how does that feel?
Yeah.
But also, Team Jacob.
What I was going to say
is, as a side note.
Apparently, Diana Gabaldon, when she wrote Outlander, she'd never been to Scotland either. She just kind of made that stuff up. And then, kind of find out
infuse
afterwards.
Infuse some,
like,
history into it. Infuse some history in.
But, when Jamie calls Claire, like, Sassenach,
whatever,
apparently that's not really what he would have said.
No.
That wasn't the real, you know,
it's
same
not a
sort
term
of thing.
Endearment.
But then again, when you're writing a book, when you're somebody who had a dream about a sparkly vampire in a meadow, and you write this book, do you really think it's going to become a worldwide phenomenon?
Dude, 100%.
You know, so she probably didn't think, you know, more than her, you know, her best friend and her husband might read it, you know. So
exactly.
Why do the research? Because who's going to read my silly book, you know? So
I have to tell you a funny story about Taylor Lautner, who, of course, played Jacob. So he's from Michigan originally. After he did Shark Boy and Lava Girl, he moved to California. But he's from West Michigan, like a town probably 20 minutes from me. And I laughed so hard in the film because his Michigan accent comes out in the film.
Yes.
When he's on the beach with Bella and he's saying something about, well, it's just nothing but a scary story. But he goes, it's just a scary story. And I'm like, oh my God, that's so Michigan. And now you cannot unhear it. And now when you watch it, yes, you will be like,
it's a scary story.
Scary story. Like, such a, cracks me up every time. I'm like, wow, we have an accent. And I know that. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Favorite quotes.
My favorite quote, there's some that are like so, like when you read them back, you're like, oh my God, like that is so like moving or poetic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I always write to, I decided as long as I'm going to hell, I might as well do it thoroughly.
Yes.
I was like, yeah. Like I, yeah, like as an adult, when I was read it the first time, I didn't recall that at all. Yeah. But as I was doing a reread, I was like, what a great line. Mm-hmm. Highlight.
Like, highlight, highlight.
Love that.
I know. I love the stupid, like stupid shiny Volvo owner.
Yes.
Like we all went crazy, yes, over that, and it's the stupidest quotes.
Well, I mean, I'm gonna mess up the full quote, but the one that starts with that, and so the lion fell in love with the lamb.
Oh,
yes, yes.
What a stupid lamb.
What a sick masochistic lion.
Yes. Like what a crazy, but we were all like, oh my God, yes.
Do I dazzle you? Or, of course, how old are you? 17. How long have you been 17? A while.
A while.
There's one line, too, about how nobody was going to bite me when she was, like, going, yeah, to
school. Yeah. She's scared and forks. No one would bite me. Yep.
Yeah.
And who was it that said, it was Mike or what's his face there that was like, so did you stab Edward with a pencil or something?
Yeah.
Like, just the sarcastic, way to make her feel bad that he hates her for no reason.
And then there's the about three things I was absolutely positive that everyone, first, Edward was a vampire. Second, there was a part of him, and I didn't know how potent that part might be, that thirsted for my blood. And third, I was unconditionally and irrevocably in love with him.
Yeah.
I found, too, I realized that I think the chapter that hooked me, was it chapter 2? Where she says, today was better but worse. The next day was better and worse.
Yeah.
It was better because it wasn't raining yet, though the clouds were dense and opaque. It was easier because I knew what to expect my day. And then she talks about it. And then she says, it was worse because I was tired. I still couldn't sleep. It was worse because Edward Cullen wasn't at school at all. And I was like, I feel like when I read that, I was like, I'm hooked. Like, yeah. I need to know where this is going.
Well, and I think, too, like, when we talk about, like, the nostalgia factor of the book, everyone can remember, like, feeling like that. Like,
yes,
school is such a dramatic, yes, like, time in your life, and having those big huge crushes, and like you don't want it to impact your entire day, but like, boy,
but it does.
Like, knowing that you're gonna see that person, that like, and for her trying to figure out, like, does he hate me?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
what is but also being so drawn to him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, her emotions were all over the place, and I think anyone who was ever a teenager can,
yes,
relate to that feeling,
that
of
feeling
like, oh, today sucked, but it's better. He's not here, and I wish he was here, but I don't want him to be here.
Right, right.
Like, is so relatable.
Well, and teenage, you're so manic.
Yes.
Everything is like really, really good or really, really bad, or really, really, yeah, because the hormonally. So,
yes,
I am a sucker for when the line relates to the title. Like, that makes me happy,
okay,
in books. When I get to the
when
part
it happens,
where I'm like,
yeah,
oh, this is the title. This is the title. You know, To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah, yeah.
When, like, it's a sin to kill a mockingbird. Yes.
Yes. You're like, there it is.
When Edward says it's twilight, it's, mm-hmm, the safest time of day for us, the easiest time, but also the saddest, in a way.
Yes.
The end of another day, the return of the night. And you're like, that's where the twilight comes from, because it's safest,
yeah,
for them. And I was like, yeah, the literary nerd in me got really excited about,
yes,
that one.
The scene where he's like talking about watching her sleep, this is one I have like,
yeah,
such mixed feelings about, because like, first of all, don't be a creeper,
right?
Like, my friend, as now as an adult with like a teenage child, like, absolutely not.
Uh-huh.
But when he's I can't remember the exact line, but he's saying something along the lines of like, you were sleeping and you're relaxed, you're comfortable, whatever, and you said my name.
Yeah.
And I knew I couldn't ignore you.
Yeah.
like that moment of like, oh, this is a this
that's
is
when
someone
he realized
on the block
yeah.
a time
yeah.
ago, and he doesn't want, like, we know she's intrigued by him,
yeah,
but we're not quite sure, like, is he murderous towards
right,
her?
Right.
Is this like a like an infatuation? But when he kind of admits to the fact that, like, hearing her say his name,
yeah.
hooked him in some way, I was like, oh,
oh
boy,
yeah.
like
yeah, yeah,
I'm
yeah.
in.
Yeah,
like I liked the way that was written out.
Yeah.
What bothered me though on the reread was that he was, and I guess I didn't catch it the first time, that he was watching her sleep before they started
yeah.
like hanging
yes.
out, and that kind of creeped me out.
Yeah.
It's like one thing if you did that when like you're already a little thing, you know, and you know, but that kind of bothered me
yeah.
on the reread.
Yeah.
There's a whole, like, I think we could talk at length about all the red flags that get thrown in this book. And certainly, like, creeping into a teenage girl's room and watching her sleep is the reddest of red flags.
Yes. Right. Well, going along with that, when the first
especially
night,
when he has the ability to drain her of all her blood and kill her,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah, 100.
He was
but
still
the
deciding.
Restraint that he was able to show.
Yeah, he was still deciding whether or not he was going to kill her. That first night that when she's aware that he's watching her sleep
yes.
after the meadow, I love when she's like, I don't want to go to sleep because I don't want to say your name or whatever. And he's like, no, don't be self-conscious. If I could dream it all, it would be about you. And I'm not ashamed of it. Like, that's
wow.
one of those,
like what
like,
a great
like
line.
Swoon-worthy like, lines where you're like, oh, this guy
kind
can't
sleep. Kind
of
gaslighting, too. Like,
it is a little bit.
That
the almost 50-year-old
in me
says that.
Don't be freaked out that I'm watching you sleep because, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I mean, I don't mean to be like. But
no, it's true, though. Like, yeah.
We
but
have,
don't
we have
you think head. That's, like, a little bit what makes this book so great? Is
yeah.
that, like, you can come at it from so many different perspectives
yeah.
where, like, it is absolutely a swoon-worthy line
mm-hmm.
for someone to say, if I could dream
right.
at all, I would
yeah.
dream about you. I'm not ashamed to say it. That I think about you so much
yep.
that you would infect my dreams.
It's,
but
the, it's
also,
the context that gets
yeah.
us.
Yeah, and then you're just like, oh, but is that also creepy? Like,
yeah.
you can think about it in so many different ways, and I think that's probably part of why this book hooked so
yeah.
many people, because no matter what, like, entry point you had, you could find
you
something
could, yeah.
to relate to.
And, you know, like, for all of us at that point, like, my kids were not old enough to be dating, so I wasn't thinking about it from, like, a, hey, what are you talking about? You're watching my kids sleep.
Yeah.
You know, they were not at that point yet, so it did. Whereas now I'd be like, whoa.
Yeah, yeah.
Can
you know?
We talk for a hot second about the parents in this story, though? Like, since you brought it up, the absolute lack of awareness that Charlie Swan has, not just of what's happening in his house, but in his, like, you are a police chief.
You're the police chief.
But
you have been
dead.
Trained in observation and investigation, and you have failed to notice vampires in your midst. Your best friend turns into a wolf, and there's a creepy man sneaking into your child's bedroom every night.
Don't you wonder why the window is suddenly not squeaking?
I love Charlie, like, I love the actor that played him in the movie, mm-hmm. which went a long way for me, because I did watch
right.
the movie almost immediately after
yes.
reading the book,
yes.
so they are very much tied in my mind, but, like, the complete lack of awareness is staggering.
Mm-hmm. I wish that there, I know it happens more in later books, but the Cullens themselves are very funny. Like Emmett,
yes.
he has some great lines, but we don't
yes.
get that in Twilight. We get that in later
yeah.
books, which
right.
is, you know.
I'm glad that there were, like, other books to expand a
yeah.
little bit on
yeah.
some of the story. I did, I mean, it, I don't want to go down a total rabbit hole into other books, but, like, when I think about some of it, like, Jasper being, like, a proud Confederate
yes.
soldier. Which I... at the time, completely willing to overlook. The first time I read it, I was like, yeah, that makes sense. But, like,
right.
now I'm like, oh, Jasper.
Oh, Jasper, why
you
did
have
you?
Lived, you have lived several lives since then.
Yes.
Maybe we should amend our thinking.
Yes.
I know you go to high school a lot, so.
I'm sure you've heard how the war ended.
I'm sure you've heard. about how that worked out.
He probably didn't go to school in the South because sunlight.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah.
So it's not like he heard about the war of Northern aggression, you know.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah, and I think, isn't it Breaking Dawn, I think, especially Emmett in Breaking Dawn, when Bella turns into a vampire? Mm-hmm. He has so many one-liners with her because they're just like brother, sister,
they can banter now.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love that for them. And that, folks, is why he's called the demon. He just knocked the door over.
You didn't want that door upright.
Food. Food.
I always think of the mushroom ravioli. That's one thing. Like when we were in Port Angeles last year, I was like, okay, I wonder where she got the mushroom ravioli. But then again, Stephanie Meyer just made it all up. So maybe nobody in Port Angeles actually sells mushroom ravioli.
Isn't there an Italian restaurant there, though? I feel like
there is an
Italian restaurant.
Yeah.
There's Italian restaurants everywhere, but.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, like, at the time, once it became popular, like, everybody was making mushroom ravioli.
Right,
they were like, get on it.
Yeah.
I also loved, like, the very domestic side of, like, Bella making food for her dad.
That, I was laughing like, so hard when I'm going through the book and I'm underlining, she makes steak and potatoes, she makes chicken enchiladas, she makes fish fry, Harry Clearwater's fish fry. Like, there's mention of food in here.
Yes. And I didn't like, that wasn't a focus the first time I read it. I was just like, dang, dude, like make your own food. Your kid's got shit going on.
Yeah.
But like reading it back, like I make food with my kid all the time. So now like reading the book back, I'm like, oh, that's like actually kind of like a cute little moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a weird thought about the whole food thing as I was reading because this is like my literary analysis brain going crazy. Like there's such a focus on food, but the vampires can't eat food. It's almost like she did that on purpose because there's that whole scene where she has Edward try the pizza.
Yeah.
And it's gross. It tastes like dirt. And so I'm like, is that why there's such a focus on food? Because normally it would just be like, I made dinner for my dad. You don't. She's so detailed about what she's making. And I'm like, it's just kind of weird that.
Like, to make that
mentioning food because nobody can have it, you know,
make that contrast really strong between the humans and the vampires.
Yes.
And I also,
and Bella's food for Edward, Bella's food. Like,
yes, I do think too, it's like, you know, when you look at all four books together and there's the point in Breaking Dawn, you know, before she's changed, there's that idea of like, you're never like, this is a thing that you like to do.
Yeah.
You like to cook. It's a thing you do with your dad. It's a thing you do, you know, with Harry Clearwater. It's a part of your life that is a very normal, relatable part of your life that you are going to have to give up.
And remember when she learns she's pregnant, she's making fried chicken and it makes her sick. So she's having this food. And then as she starts to not be able to keep food down. And she has to drink blood in order to, it's a weird, I don't know if she did that intentionally or if it's,
I low-key feel like, she mentioned food a lot and was very detailed with the food so that it was a very clear thing that Bella has to give up.
Yeah.
I was going to say something about that because I know it was in like our outline about, I wasn't sure who put that in there, but that's right. That was Sarah that put the outline together.
Yeah.
But I think that's a really good point.
The other thing we were going to talk about is what kind of food do you eat while you're reading? Like when you were reading this book, were you like must-haves?
I feel like I read it so fast. I don't remember snacking. I think I was just like.
We all know what I was snacking on.
Yes.
Yeah, Cheetos or Doritos. Or
a bag of Doritos. I had 100% up in the middle of the night with like an entire family-sized bag of Doritos and like a Coke.
Which also,
I'll get out.
Hello, Coke was mentioned. She doesn't just drink a soda. She drinks like Coke through the whole book.
Coke. Yeah.
When I was at the, I was at an author reader fest this weekend talking with authors and one of them, I can't remember who it was, or I would totally say it, but she was talking about how she doesn't lend her books to people because they often have Cheeto prints. And I was like, she knows Kit. She must know Kit, because Kit is the same way. I was dying inside going, I'm trying to be all professional. Like, here's my card and all this. And I'm like, she's like, yeah, I got like Cheeto marks on my, and I'm like, you are not the only one.
Everywhere. You're not the, there's, I wish you could see the side of this book, my copy of Twilight, but yeah. There's like very distinct, like.
And think about that. They're like antique yes. Cheeto marks.
Just
now.
Stain marks on there.
No shame.
That's the one
no
thing shame. I don't miss about getting like hard copy assignments for my students, because I use Canvas. I don't miss like what would be all over them, you know, like, right. Like so Cheeto junk. Marks and you know, the
food marks and everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the places in this novel where one of us, two of us, just one has actually been.
I have been there, but it was when I was like 10 years old.
Oh, so you went there before you even knew Twilight.
Before I even knew.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But so Marianne has the stories.
I kind of have a funny story about that, because, you know, as a teacher, one of the things that kids love to do is once, like I don't let them be friends with me on social media till they graduate.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a student we graduated like 3 or 4 years ago, and he's originally from Washington State. And so he's my Facebook friend. And I was posting about like my planned trip to Washington and going to Forks. And he was like, no, miss, don't go to Forks. Don't go to Forks. Go to Port Washington. That's where I'm from. That's like my parents. Gosh. You know, that's where I spend my summers. Don't go to Forks. I'm like, dude, I have to go to Forks. He's like, no, don't go there. It's not worth it. Go to Port Washington. I'm like, I have to go to Forks. You don't understand. I have to go to Forks. This is non-negotiable.
It's a You're bus. Like,
I'll go to Port Angeles as well, but.
Yeah. Oh, this is Port. No, not Port Angeles. Port Townsend.
Port Washington. Townsend. Yeah.
No, Port Townsend. Port Townsend, yeah, because there's Townsend, Port Angeles, and then, Port Townsend is a super, super cute town,
mm-hmm.
and I loved it, and he was trying so hard to get me to stay, not go anywhere but there, and, like, every time I post something about it, he's like, no, don't go to Forks, and so, obviously, I obviously did go to Forks, and Forks is pretty nondescript.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, you see that iconic sign when you first. The drive there is beautiful. I mean, first time I'd ever been to the Pacific Northwest. The drive is beautiful, twisty, turny roads, huge evergreens and lakes. And sometimes you're afraid you're going to like turn into one of the lakes because the roads are so twisty. Forks itself is pretty nondescript. There's really not a lot to it. It's cute how they've embraced the Twilight. Where they have like the signs out in front of the houses, and they're mostly Book Bella's house or Book Cullen's house.
Yeah.
Because movies, as I was watching a video about this recently, you know, like the movie Cullen's house, I think, was in Portland, Oregon. Mm-hmm. So it was very far away. So they kind of stick to the book version
of
the places. But honestly, it's just a small town. The visitor center was incredibly friendly in that they had two different versions of Bella's truck there. They're very friendly. They have like tours of like the movie costumes and scenery, which was fun to go through. My saddest story from Forks is we were waiting to do our tour at the visitor center. And we went into the grocery store for something or another, some little Safeway grocery store or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I bought a hoodie there. And it was like the world's most comfortable hoodie. And I thought it might give me a little street cred with my students who were reading Twilight, you know. And a year later, I was in Boston and I lost it. And it was the saddest moment. Yes. I turned in like a lost and found report, because it was not only was it from Forks, but it was so comfortable.
Right?
And it was like from a grocery store. So it's not like I could call the grocery store and say, hey, could you mail me one of these hoodies? Because, you know, generally speaking, grocery stores are not in the mail order business.
Right.
But And First Beach was beautiful. I mean, again, it, being from Florida and being from the East Coast, growing up on the East Coast, the beaches were so otherworldly compared to what mm-hmm. I'm used to. Mm-hmm. You know, the rocks and the driftwood it was beautiful. Yeah. That was
those cool like cliff like rocks or whatever that are literally 50 feet out or whatever. And, yeah. Did you go to the rainforest?
We didn't have time because where we were staying was about a 2-hour drive and it was starting to get dark and we didn't want to be on the twisty, turny roads,
I don't blame you.
At nighttime. But
yeah,
I was so excited to go. I love going to places. And that's part of why I wanted to include travel in the name of the blog and the podcast because that's one of my favorite things to do is to go places that I've read about in books so that I can envision them and see all the places I've been talking about or reading about rather.
Yeah. 100%. It's funny. I was supposed to go to Forks with a bunch of Twilight Moms probably 10 years ago now. I can't remember why I ended up not being able to go. And I've always been sad about that I didn't get to go with them. My parents,
I think the experience would be way different like that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. My parents have been there. A few years ago, my parents are national park geeks. They are trying to literally hit almost all. They've hit, they've gone to like 40, 45 national parks.
Wow. Yeah, yeah.
What they do. And so they were in the Pacific Northwest. And like, we're going to go to this whole rainforest. And I was like, and they went to First Beach and all that. Nice. And then a few years ago, they went to Italy and they went to, I think it's Montepulciano, which is where New Moon was filmed.
Oh, okay.
So I'm like, you haven't even read Twilight, and you've literally been to two places that Twilight's been filmed or whatever. But
yeah, Jerry had actually been to Forks before I was because he was doing some work for customers his out there in Squim, which is kind of between Forks and like Port Townsend.
Yeah.
And he was out there for like a month, and he's like, I've been to Forks, and you haven't, you know. But,
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so my parents are big national park people too, and now I'm a big national park person. But we would do road trips every summer or like kind of big camping trips. And I've probably been out that way 2 or 3 times, but I'm 12 was maybe the oldest I was when I was there. But we would stay at Claylock Lodge, which is south of First Beach by quite a fair bit. But we would spend a lot of time like driving up and down the coast. So we've been to First Beach, we've been to Ho Rainforest, we've been, of these places, which I get so distracted when I'm reading that, like, as I was reading the book and they would mention something, I would be like texting my dad, like, do you have pictures of me on that beach?
Yeah.
I think that was at this beach. And I'm like lining them up with like the movie.
And,
I'm trying to like figure out, like, have I been to these places? And being able to go, like, for me, where you're like, this could be real. Like, being able to go, I've been there, was, like, so much fun.
Oh, absolutely.
I
want to
go
that.
Back, but I haven't. Haven't gone back since this whole thing.
Maybe we need a trip out there to the Pacific Northwest at some point.
I think we do. I concur.
I can tell you have a really cute little place to stay in Squim. We stayed in a railroad caboose.
Oh, how it's fun. Like
I would love that.
Yeah, that would be so fun.
It was like this little like Airbnb kind of place. It was like half a dozen, maybe eight. I don't think they had more than 8 like railroad cars. And like ours was Western themed.
That. Yeah, that's so
and
cool.
And it was so adorable. I mean, I wanted to stay there, but like they had this like this non-refundable policy, and I hate dealing with that.
Yeah.
And then when we're in Port Townsend, Jerry's like, why don't you check that railroad place and see if they have an opening? And sure enough, they did. And it was so cool. That was awesome. Like the highlight of the trip. So
okay, so our final
thoughts.
Do we think this book holds up?
I think it does. You know, especially when you think of the people who it was written for. You know, maybe not for us anymore.
Right.
But I think for teenagers, like you said, who are in the midst of their first love, they're looking for that magic. I think it still holds up.
Gosh. I think it absolutely holds up. I think the feelings that are presented in the book are kind of universal. And I also think as adults, it still holds up for us too, just from a different perspective.
Yeah.
Like we're reading it and enjoying it, but it's like we have a whole different viewpoint on it now.
Right.
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 As you grow older. Kit and I were talking earlier, too, when I read a book, sometimes if I reread one, I'm transported back to who I was when I read it the first time. And so when I reread Twilight, for some reason, September is when I like to read Twilight because that's when I read it the first time. And I just remember that person I was and why I liked this book so much. And it's like, I don't know, reread it for like a nostalgic reason.
That's giving me goosebumps, Sarah.
And I do that with a lot of books when I read it. Sometimes I just, and I remember the friendships we've made like from there. And I just, I don't know. It's like it's still my happy place in a weird way.
It's still a happy place. It's a total comfort read.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yes, for sure.
So I agree. I think it holds up. It's funny. I have more students now all of a sudden. I think you're right. We're going to see a surge again 20 years later of kids going, what is this book that people
are reading? I'm seeing more and more on social media, people posting about it. So I think it's going to come back.
Yep. And Taylor Lautner's going to do his reality show about werewolves or something like that. Then everyone's going to be like, who is this Taylor Lautner guy? And who's this?
Right.
Call us, Taylor. We are available. Yes,
Taylor, we will be happy to help you promote this and chat a little.
100%.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about our next book.
Yep, our next
that
book.
We're going to read. And before we say the title or who it's by, as an aside, because this connects beautifully, I found this author for the first time. I don't know how you guys discovered her, but I found her on TikTok, and I found her through a video about Twilight that landed on my For You page. Some of you who are listening are going to be like, I know exactly who you're talking about. Her husband's name is Drew. And the first time I ever heard of this author was her husband watching Twilight for the first time. And having
I remember that video. Yes.
Like, it's so, so relatable.
Yes.
His reactions to Twilight were so overblown and so dramatic. And it immediately reminded me of how much fun reading Twilight was because he was losing his ever-loving mind. And she was recording him, and she would just, like, ask questions to, like, the audience. Like, someone please explain to Drew how – this is, you know, Breaking Dawn versus Twilight, but someone please explain to Drew how Edward could get Bella pregnant because he doesn't have blood.
I remember that video.
And I was like, I have an answer to that. And I talked at length about diamond bodily fluids. And and then I was like, I watched all of her other videos, and I was like, oh my God, she's an author.
She's an author.
She's so phenomenal. Her name's Geneva Rose. Mm-hmm. And I read all of her books from there, but I found her because I was watching other Twilight videos, and my algorithm said, you want to watch this, and they were right.
That is so funny. All right, cool. So our book is, the first one we're going to read is A Perfect Marriage by Geneva Rose. I discovered her on Audible, I think. I listened to it. She had a free book.
Oh, cool.
And I was I'm going to listen to this. I'm really into thrillers right now, and so I listened to it, and I love her. So I've not read this one, so I'm super excited to read this one.
Yeah. And I've not read any of her books, so I'm curious to read it, because I didn't like thrillers for a long time, but now with my in-person book club, we do tend to read a lot of mysteries and thrillers, so I'm excited to try something new.
Do we want a little synopsis of the book so that our listeners can decide, is this the book for them?
Sure.
All right, so here we go. The Perfect Marriage by Geneva Rose. Would you defend your husband if he was accused of killing his mistress?
Oh, interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
Sarah Morgan is a successful and powerful defense attorney in Washington, D.C. At 33 years old, she is a named partner at her firm, and life isn't going exactly how she planned. The same cannot be said for her husband, Adam. He's a struggling writer who has had little success in his career. He begins to tire of his and Sarah's relationship because she's constantly working. And then out in the secluded woods at Adam and Sarah's second home, Shady, shady Adam.
Yeah.
Adam engages in a passionate affair with Kelly Summers. And then one morning, everything changes. Adam is arrested for Kelly's murder. She has been found stabbed to death in their second home. And Sarah finds herself playing the defender for her own husband, a man accused of murdering his mistress.
Ooh.
But is he guilty or is he innocent?
Interesting.
I cannot wait. Sounds amazing. Yeah.
And the second book is coming out soon.
Yes, second book, Perfect Divorce.
A Perfect Divorce. The Perfect Divorce.
The Perfect Divorce comes out April 15th. Yes. So
if you like this one,
yep,
and we think you will, there's a second one coming hot on its heels. When is this one? When are we dropping our podcast?
April 28th.
April 28th. Between now and then, we will have some stuff on our Facebook, some discussion. So if you are reading along with us, that is where you can find some places to dig deeper. And of course, on all of our social media accounts, we'll be ranting about books at all times.
Yep.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Please follow all our socials, like and subscribe to this podcast. Nothing will help us more. Leave us reviews. It's all everything that helps us get noticed. And of course, share with your friends.
And if you have books that we should be reading,
yeah,
tell us what
tell
they
us.
Are.
Absolutely.
We love a book rec. Because our TBR piles
can't be bigger.
Can't be bigger. At this point, we're going to be buried underneath them, and that is okay.
And that's okay. All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, all.
Thank you.
Till next time.
Till next time.